Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, March the 1st. Welcome to the month of March. Today, we're going to be catching up with my good friend, Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. We're going to take stock of what's happening in the country. It's 8 months before the midterms, literally 8 months before the midterm elections. We're not going to get into predictions. It's way too early to do that. But we are going to look at some trends, some things that are happening in the country that sort of they just don't get the attention, you might say, from the national media. So much of the national media seems to be obsessed with Trump, the ups and downs, who's angry at who at the White House or whatever. And I think they're missing out some of the big things that are happening in the country, particularly in some of the states. So we'll hear a little bit of that from Barry. Some of the big issues of 2018 could be immigration, could be gun control. I think the U.S. economy is actually going to be a good issue for President Trump. It's starting to get better and better all the time. And obviously, a good economy is always good for an incumbent. Foreign policy is always the wild card. You just never know what's going to happen. The situation in the Middle East right now is very troubling. The situation with North Korea is always unstable. You've got situations like Venezuela. Very unstable situation down there that could conceivably have an impact on the United States or require some kind of action from the United States. And then there's always Russia. I mean, we heard today Putin, probably bluffing, but nevertheless talking about nuclear weapons and so on. So quite a bit happening. Let me say hello to our good friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. How are you, Barry?
Good. Good to talk to you.
How's the weather up there? Up in Minnesota, I mean. Yeah, I think it's starting to warm up, which means it's baseball season around the corner for you and I. And I just thought I would take this one from the pages of baseball history. Mickey Mantle retired from baseball on this day after 18 seasons. And I was a little bit too young to really get into him, but I think you really got into Mickey Mantle. You were a little older than me, so you could appreciate him. Maybe I never saw him play, for example. I know you did. So I'm sure you have a few memories. I'm sure you have a few memories of the great Mick.
Well, he was a great player. I saw him hit some home runs. He was all around. He had very bad knees. He had osteoporosis, and it finally got him in the end. I'm amazed. I didn't know he played 18 years. That's a very long time for a man in his condition.
Absolutely.
I think he hit 565 home runs.
Yeah, something like that. When, you know, he was up there when he retired. He was in the top five or six. Obviously, time has passed. He's dropped a little bit. But, yes, he's still number one as far as a switch hitter. And because of his bad health the last couple of seasons, his career average dropped to .298. But the last few seasons, he was just hanging around. He probably would have been better off if he'd retired and maybe after he hit number 500 in 1967. But anyway, great memories, great book. There's a great book about Mickey Mantle that came out recently, a biography of Mickey Mantle that is just absolutely great. It's called The Kid, and it's a great book. Well, let's talk a little bit about politics. A lot of good stuff happening. As I mentioned, we're 8 months away from Election Day, and it's hard to tell what's going to happen 8 months down the road. But I thought maybe tonight you could help us understand what you see from your position there at the Prairie Editor, what trends and what things you may be seeing. So why don't we begin with the midterms, the House. Right now, the Democrats would have to pick up 25 seats. They apparently intend to do some of that in California by picking up some seats there, in Pennsylvania by picking up some seats. How do you see it? I mean, I know it's early and it's hard to predict, but how do you see it from your position at the Prairie Editor of the House and maybe the Senate as well, Barry?
Well, historically, the party out of power does very well in the first midterm of a new administration. And I think there's a lot of wishful thinking on the part of Democrats. They're going to pick up more than 25 seats and take control of the House. It's possible. It's always possible. But there's really no real trend yet. There are two states where redistricting has helped them, California and Pennsylvania, but helped them on paper. But, you know, the decisions aren't made until Election Day. For example, there's a peculiar rule in California, I think one other state, where instead of each party having a nominee, the primary election picks the two top candidates of whatever party. So that in California, it was designed, I believe, by the Democrats, so that there are districts where the two Democrats are the top vote getters in the primary, so they're on the November ballot. There's no Republican. But I believe it's the Darrell Issa seat that he retired from, which was almost a certain pickup by the Democrats. They've got so many candidates in the primary that it's possible that there will be two Republicans on the November ballot, and the Democrats will miss out on a almost sure thing pickup. So I don't know what that – I'm making no prediction. I'm simply saying there's so many things that can happen in 8 months. We have a booming economy. The market went down today, but it goes up right back the next day. The Federal Reserve apparently is going to keep a close eye on things. And there's no question the unemployment is very low. And industrial production is high. All those good signs for at least for the next several months, a booming economy. Now, no economy booms forever. But the question is, what will the economy be like in September and October? If it's very strong, there's not going to be any takeover of the House. And there will be significant gains by the public and the Senate, where they have a mathematical advantage this cycle. And also, things are sort of breaking their way. Recent polls in North Dakota and Florida, both having Democratic incumbents running for re-election, show their Republican challengers within the margin of error. And it's early. Remember, in polling, whatever the incumbent doesn't have usually goes to the challenger.
That's right.
And the incumbents are in Florida and in North Dakota are fighting in states which Trump carries, especially in North Dakota. And then you've got Missouri, you've got Montana, you've got Indiana, you've got a number, and you've got Wisconsin got a number of states where Democratic incumbents are in trouble. West Virginia.
Right. Let me ask you a question, because you said something very interesting. I just wanted to make sure I didn't pass up a chance to pick up on it. You can continue in a minute, but I just wanted to ask you a question. Over the years, we've heard this, and from pollsters and from analysts, they'll say, if an incumbent is under 50%, more than likely he's going to lose, because as you just indicated, he's not going to get what he doesn't. I mean, if he's under 50% and he's well known already, chances are he's not going to get too much more.
That's right.
On election day. And I find it interesting, because there are five seats in or five states. We're not including Alabama. That won't be till 2020. But you've got North Dakota, Montana, Missouri, Indiana, West Virginia, those five states where you have – those are very strong Trump states. I mean, West Virginia, he carried like by 40 points. He's very popular there. And in those five states, the Democrat did not vote for tax reform, which I was very surprised, actually. I couldn't believe it. I said, why wouldn't they support tax reform? But then on the other hand, they didn't go with the party when it came to this DACA vote. And now you've got the question of gun control, which I don't think plays very well in those states either. So and if the Democrats have any chance of picking up the Senate, I mean, the slightest chance, they're going to have to at least retain three or four of those seats. But I look at those seats right now, and with the exception of Joe Manchin, I think all the others are going to have a heck of a hard time holding on to their seats. Now, Joe Manchin may lose, but he's the only one, I think, that has a pretty good chance because he's so popular and he's so conservative and he's so connected to West Virginia. So I don't know, just a quick reaction to how I see it. And then you have the question of gun control, which is a disaster for Democrats in all of these rural states and rural districts. You have the question of immigration, which is also a problem for them when they get to these areas. So, I mean, they've got a lot going against them, these Democrats, Barry, running in these states. I guess that's kind of a long-winded way of saying that these incumbents are in trouble, Barry.
Well, and the other thing is, there's 24 Democratic incumbent seats up, and only 8 Republicans. And of the 8, only 2 are really vulnerable, maybe 3. One of them was Arizona, where Jeff Flake was a certain loser, but he was retired, and now they have a strong candidate, Congresswoman McSally, and she, if she's the nominee, she's got 2 opponents in the primary, but if she's the nominee, I think she wins. Then Dean Heller, who was anti-Trump, reversed himself and then turned out to be, and he was here only a few weeks ago, and he was quite pro-Trump, even though he's in a state that was carried by Hillary Clinton. I think he has a good chance to win. And then in Tennessee, where Corker was retiring, and Amper, Martha Blackburn is probably going to be the Republican. She's very pro-Trump, and that's a Republican state. So they may not lose a single seat of their own, or one, maybe 2, but I don't think so. Whereas they've got to defend at least 11 of their 24 seats are somewhat vulnerable or very vulnerable, including in Minnesota, where after Al Franken retired, the lieutenant governor was appointed. She's not a strong candidate so far, but the Republicans don't have a serious candidate against her, so she may squeak through. But that's a potential win, too, especially if Minnesota bucks the trend and goes red this year. This cycle, as I suggested, could happen. In fact, it looks like the Republicans are going to pick up 2 House seats in Minnesota, bucking a trend of incumbent parties, party in power, usually losing a lot of seats. They might win 2 seats in Minnesota. So it's but at the same time, there's no real indication of a red trend or a blue trend. And when you read in the paper or hear on the air or hear one of my colleague pundits pontificate that it's a blue trend, or even a few who are saying it's a red trend, nobody really knows. And a lot will depend. And by the way, gun control is an issue which gets hot around an incident, a tragic incident like we just had, and then it goes away until the next incident. Immigration is a chronic problem, but as you point out, in places where a lot of vulnerable seats are up for election, the issue doesn't necessarily work to the advantage of the Democrats. And then you've got Donald Trump, who continually defies all predictions, all stereotypes. I mean, his behavior on the gun control issue, which was quite acrobatic, because he's not suddenly for gun control, but he's responding sympathetically to what happened and even making some concessions and compromises and telling the NRA, you know, I'm with you, but there's a few things we can do here, and let's do them. And, you know, sometimes, like with the abortion issue, people want to be 100% pure, but that isn't the way the world works anymore. And now I happen to disagree with President Trump on if he wants to set tariffs on steel and aluminum. I understand why he wants to do it, but tariffs never work. They just never work, Silvio, and they work. They're counterproductive. But
right.
He has delighted labor, even labor unions. And that's the base, part of the base of his new, of the new party he's creating, as Newt Gingrich points out today in his article. There's a new, the Republican Party is being reformed by Trump, much more of a blue-collar party. In fact, the establishment elites, who used to be pretty dominant in the Republican Party, are mostly anti-Trumpers and are threatening to leave the party because he's not responding to their stereotypes of what he should be. And I suspect that the threat of tariffs is just that, a threat
right.
to get our competitors to play a much more even playing field, because I think that no serious economic advisor would tell Mr. Trump to impose actual tariffs, and I would oppose them on principle because they never work. They never work. Sometimes in a very short period of time, they can have some effect, but they never work in the long term.
Right.
And so and that's not a conservative,
it's
conservative
just,
viewpoint.
Just the way it is. That's right.
And what was one of the things that happened was, you know, the tariffs that were imposed at the beginning of the Depression just made it worse and caused the Depression to go into high gear because you cut off the money supply and you created enormous unemployment. But so Trump is I call him Trump the Disruptor. And he's disrupting the whole government in Washington, D.C. And frankly, most Americans, I think, by the way, the polls, the Rasmussen polls are continually, which are, by the way, the most likely to be accurate because they are not phone polls. They're impersonal. So people who would never tell a live person that they're supporting Trump, even though they are, would do so in a computer or the kind of polls that Rasmussen. So Rasmussen shows Trump at 49 or 50% almost every day now. And remember, even that poll could be understating his support.
Right, as it did in 2016, if you remember, we often spoke during 2016 how often the polls underestimated his support. They obviously did underestimate it. You know, getting back to Rasmussen for a second, they were the only pollster, as I recall, who didn't buy into the Hillary Clinton was going to be our next president, because I think they must have seen some data. But if I may just stick with Rasmussen for a second, because he also has, getting back to gun control for a minute, he also has an amazing poll that came out the last couple of days. And I say he because I'm still thinking of Scott Rasmussen, although I know he's no longer running that, I think. Somebody else is. But anyway, I always think of Scott Rasmussen when I think of Rasmussen reports. But Rasmussen has a fascinating poll about gun control that goes completely against the conventional wisdom or what you're getting every single day from so many in the national media. In this poll, it says that most Americans think that what happened in South Florida was actually a failure of government. that it wasn't so much that we need more gun laws, but that we need to enforce the ones we have and do a better job with the gun laws that we have. And that goes against the conventional wisdom coming out of so many of these national media outlets who are saying that Americans want more gun control. I never felt that was true, and here Rasmussen confirms that, Barry.
Well, I mean, what we have the admission by the FBI that they didn't successfully deal with all the warnings they had, the many warnings they had about the shooter. So, the alleged shooter. So, and it's always a question of, most people who have almost the overwhelming number are law-abiding. And people who have guns who are not law-abiding don't register, don't go through background checks, have them secretly. And people will always be able to get guns secretly. On the other hand, people who go crazy, who do those shootings, are depraved, mentally disturbed. And that's the thing we need to determine in advance, mm-hmm. especially since almost all of them go on the Internet and openly declare their intentions.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Most of them are people who need help, and we need interventions. Barry, let me take a little break, and then I want to come back and continue our conversation. We're chatting with our good friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor, and we're talking about the political trends in the country 8 months before the elections. It's too early to make predictions, but I think we're talking about some of the trends that we're seeing, and some of the things that we're seeing are not exactly what you're hearing from the national press. We're going to take a little break. We're going to hear from one of our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Let's get back with our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. Barry, we're talking about gun control and immigration and lots of issues. I think another issue that could be the wild card, or one of the wild cards, there's always something weird that happens that we don't know. And I think that could very well be foreign policy. I know you write a great deal about events around the world, but you know, you've got North Korea, you've got Russia, you've got the situation in the Middle East, you have a situation now in Venezuela where Venezuela is now more than just a local problem. You've got Colombia, people moving into Colombia, and that's becoming a real international problem down there, as well as a horrific humanitarian problem. You could even have problems in Cuba as the Castro regime tries to deal with transition. I mean, all kinds of North Korea, Russia. Foreign policy is always a potential problem. How do you feel about that?
Well, I do write a lot about foreign policy. I'm very interested. But I have to tell you that it almost has no impact on elections. Even the only time it has some impact on a national election is during the presidential election. Then sometimes when things get heated up, as they were in the second term of President Eisenhower, that sort of ended Adlai Stevenson's hopes defeating Eisenhower when there was the Suez Canal crisis and the Hungarian invasion by Russia. And people said, well, we want somebody who we can trust on foreign policy. But for the most part, foreign policy has very little impact. It's very important, mm-hmm. But it has very little impact. I don't think that will be one of the factors in the election. I think the most important factor, as always, will be the state of the economy. And if this stock market boom and economic boom that's now continuing, that began with the election, essentially began with the election. Certainly the business confidence began with the election of Donald Trump. The actual cycle itself is beyond actual presidential administrations, but although they can have an impact on it. But if people are feeling good, if they're continually taking home more pay, and as they are now, and their IRA and 401ks are booming, their net worth is way up, and interest rates are not too high, I don't think there's going to be any question that there'll be a, if not a win, outright win, there will be a minimal loss of House seats and easily a gain of 4 or 5 Senate seats, maybe more.
Interesting.
And some of the governor's races that are now considered too close to call may end up going Republican, although state elections do have a highly local character that sometimes is not determined by the national situation. And
right.
Minnesota would be a classic case of that, and Wisconsin as well. So I think you have the potential here of the economy. Now, if the economy goes sour,
sure,
then you're going to see the loss of the House, and you're going to see pretty much the status quo in the Senate races. And there'll be some state houses lost by the Republicans. So it could go either way, but, the economy doesn't move very quickly. And the stock market is usually the stock market tends to overreact emotionally on a day-to-day basis, as it did today, as it did the day before. That's always the case, almost always the case. But in a general movement, the stock market is a predictor of the economy 3 to 8 months ahead, usually about 6 months ahead, but 3 to 8. So if the market is booming now, that means in August, September, and October, the economy should be pretty good. That should be a warning sign to the Democrats. And as I pointed out in my most recent piece, a lot of the very smart and savvy Democratic strategists are now advising Democrats to be cautious about condemning the tax reform bill. The tax reform bill was a huge victory for the Republicans and a huge victory for the country, because it's bringing back maybe close to $500 billion in foreign holdings by American companies to be invested here. The tax burden is lower, which provides more funds for not only expansion and growth, but for new jobs. And we're seeing, job unemployment is at historic lows, including job unemployment levels for Black and Hispanic voters, which Democrats were very dumb to ignore when the president made that statement in his State of the Union. So what we have here is a potential. No matter what happens, the tax bill is not going to produce a worse economy. If the economy does go sour, it won't be because taxes are lower, it'll be because of other reasons.
Right.
So the fact that so many Democrats voted against the tax bill, used against them. For example,
sure.
Senator
I think
Heller,
all of them did. I think all
well,
of them
did,
didn't it?
So Senator
yeah,
Heller pointed
did.
Out that he was very vulnerable when he was anti-Trump. Now it's pretty much a toss-up. But his opponent is a freshman congresswoman who, as he pointed out, voted against the tax bill, which even liberal Democrats in Nevada love. And you can be sure there will be ads about the fact that she voted against the tax bill. So that's, and in here in Minnesota, the two Democratic senators, only one of whom is vulnerable, but one of them is vulnerable, and she decided to vote against the tax bill, even though it's having terrific benefits for Minnesota workers and voters. So, you know, there's a lot of, and of course, then you've got Bernie. One of the things I pointed out in my recent piece is that both parties have divisions, ideological divisions. But you wouldn't know that from the media, because the media plays up even some obscure right-wing nutball who wants to run as a Republican in a local race, and the media makes it a front-page story nationally. And everybody knows that even the Republicans are horrified and will do anything they can to keep that person off the ballot because they don't agree. And the perfect example of that was Alabama, where Roy Moore actually won the Republican nomination, and Republican conservatives refused to vote for him, which spoiled the plan of the Democrats to embarrass the Republicans. So the fact of the matter is that, however, there is division among the Democrats all over the place.
That's right.
And you don't hear about it.
No, you don't, and you're seeing it in California,
you know,
like you wrote in your article.
So the media is making a mistake about Trump. They think that by ignoring it, it'll go away. What it does is it doesn't give enough information to the ordinary voter, regardless of their political views, to make a judgment about it. So then Democrats build up everything's going rosy for us, and the Republicans are divided. We're going to win big. Well, if you don't know the fact that your own party has divisions which are going to cost you seats, then you're going to be awfully surprised on Election Day. And by the way, that's exactly what happened in November, first week of November of 2016. The media played up all the bad news about Trump, none of the bad news about Hillary, but that's not what the voters were thinking.
Right.
And so there's a huge surprise. So what they're doing, not only is what they're doing bad journalism and the wrong thing, but it works against them.
That's right.
It's self-destructive. Well,
it's like you're saying in California. I mean, look at the situation in California where you have Dianne Feinstein, a lady who I disagree with probably more than I agree with, but, you know, she's a decent person, someone who has been a pretty serious senator, and, you know, the party will not even endorse her. I mean, they're endorsing this other gentleman, De Leon, who is a real left-winger. But let me put a couple of other things on the table because I want to get your reaction. You've had some, over the last few weeks, you've had some Democrat victories in state legislatures. Not a lot of them, but they always do get a lot of attention. And then when you look at these Democrat candidates and you look at their positions, you find out that they're very centrist Democrats. I would even argue in some cases center-right Democrats. For example, in western Pennsylvania right now, there's a race to fill a special election where the Democrat is opposed to gun control, opposed to abortion. He doesn't want to support Nancy Pelosi. I mean, if you took the D away from this guy and put an R next to it, you couldn't tell the difference with the Republican he's running against. So I'm wondering if that's going to be the kind of Democrat, or if maybe the local parties are sending the national party a message saying, hey, we're sick and tired of, you know, of the Tom Perez and Nancy Pelosi. We want a different kind of Democrat who can actually win a state election, Barry.
Well, and you made a point earlier. The Republicans have an overwhelming lead in state legislatures and state representatives and state senators. So if they lose some of those races, the numbers, I mean, it's almost mathematically likely they will make some losses. Now, that doesn't mean to say that it might be a trend. That's possible. But, for example, in Minnesota, we had two resignations, one by a Democratic state representative and one by, by a Republican state representative and one by a Democratic state senator. And this special election was held recently, and both seats were held by their parties. And in fact, in the state Senate race, the Republicans did better this time than they did 4 years ago when the seat was up. So, or 3 years ago, because it was a special election. My point being, state representative elections are really determined by local conditions. And, I mean, I think it's much more fair to point out special elections in congressional races and state and U.S. Senate races. And if the Republicans would start losing, when it's a fair fight, Alabama was not really a fair fight. The Republicans did lose a seat, but the interesting thing was that the Democrat who won is further to the right than Joe Manchin. I mean, so we all come back to the two words, Donald Trump. The American politics today is about Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
You either dislike him or you like him. You either like what he does or you don't like what he does. But whatever he's doing, he's dominating the airwaves. I mean, for example, as Newt pointed out, it was a masterstroke. Newt's article today pointed out that it was a masterstroke on the part of Trump to declare his reelection effort and name his campaign manager way ahead of the time anyone else did. But what did he do? He totally dominated the news cycle. And he does that continually. So you may not like his tweets, and some of them I don't like, to be honest with you. And sometimes I think he's wrong. But the fact is the tweets are the most successful communication technique innovation of the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Presidential sure. elections.
I agree. I don't like his tweet. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, for the most part, they succeed, if not in being absolutely verifiably true, they succeed in taking away media attention. I mean, the media attention on Trump, as you point out, is, and I have pointed out for some time, is very heavily negative.
Mm-hmm.
So what does he have to do? Well, he has learned how to neutralize that by simply doing these tweets and doing things which are unexpected and forcing them to deal with them. Now,
right.
deal with them negatively, but it isn't always the way people, the ordinary voters out there, are reacting.
Right. That's right.
And in many cases, they're reacting positively.
Exactly.
We may not agree.
No, I agree, and I feel the same. I mean, I'm not really into the tweets either. I mean, I guess you could put me as one of those who wish he would tweet less. But one of the things, the brilliant, the genius of the tweet, if I could put it that way, is that he tweets early in the morning, so at 7 o'clock Eastern time, the media is reading his tweets, so the media is reacting to what he's saying. So he's kind of setting up the conversation for the morning shows for what is going to be discussed that day. So in that respect, he is, as you say, taking control of the narrative. I mean, I may not like everything that he tweets, but at least he's the guy that everybody's talking about. So I think in that sense, he is, as you say, he's controlling the conversation. I will... as we're getting here to the end, I will say this, and I'm paraphrasing this. I don't have the exact quote, but it was in the Wall Street Journal editorial. Perhaps you saw this yourself, Barry. But the Wall Street Journal editorial said something like this, and I'm paraphrasing. It said, "We sometimes get very frustrated with how he does it or his style or the tweets or how he talks, but we love the results. And that's how I think a lot of us are starting, at least myself, speaking for myself, that's how I'm starting to think about Trump. No, I don't like everything that he does. No, I don't like everything that he says. And yes, there are times when he is maybe he shoots from the hip, as they like to say. But at the end of the day, I love his tax reform. I love the judges. And I love the fact that I think his foreign policy is much more level-headed than his predecessor. So as far as the results are concerned, if his name was Kasich, if his name was Bush, if his name was Rubio, if his name was Cruz, with these results, I would love him as well, even though the style I know would be different, Barry.
Right. And that's what happened, as I pointed out, with Dean Heller. He was as anti-Trump as Flake was during and after the election. And then he said, I heard him quoted saying, he then realized that what Trump was doing was what he wanted to happen. And he could see that Trump was making it happen. Trump is actually leading here. You know, we hear a lot about leadership, and we talk about it. But in fact, Trump is leading. Now, you may honestly disagree with where the direction he's taking. That's fair. But he's leading. And he's making things happen. And I think that I have written, there is no chance, except in very few isolated precincts or even congressional districts, for any Republican to run negative to Trump and expect to win in 2018.
That's right. No, you're
right.
You
don't
have
to love him,
but
you can't.
That's it.
If you attack him, You lose half your base,
right,
or more.
That's right. No, I think that's exactly right. Well, Barry, I want to do another show soon because there's a couple of other things that are going to be perhaps interesting factors this year. Maybe not so much in the midterms, but big political stories. One is the Supreme Court decision that should be coming out in June about the public sector unions. I think that could have a huge impact politically, particularly on the Democrat Party. So I want us to think ahead maybe to a show like that, particularly if you write an article about that topic. I'd like to do a show regarding that topic. And then also I want us in a future show to talk about some of these, what maybe could be described as potential scandals with FISA and stuff like that. I know you don't like to speculate. I don't like to speculate either. But there could be some real problems there about things that happened in the Obama administration. So maybe if you write a post about either one of those two things down the road, I like to do just even a special show about that, Barry, and because I think those could be two big stories of 2018 as the year develops, Barry.
And when is the baseball season? What's the day it begins?
The baseball season this year is very interesting, because the baseball season, at least the Rangers, and I think we're probably pretty typical of most clubs, is starting out the last day of March, the Friday, the last day of March. I don't have a calendar here in front of me, but the last day of March. So we will have
only
a March.
Only days away.
Well, not quite. Today is the first, so I'm going to give it three more weeks or so, but it was an early spring training this year, and it's going to be an early. Actually, I like the idea, Barry, because that way, you know, you can get some games a little bit earlier in the year, so that the season doesn't go so much into late October or even potentially November. I think it's very dangerous in some of these open parks, like a Minnesota, like Yankee Stadium, like Fenway Park. Like Cleveland, where the weather could really be very negative and could impact the game in a bit negative way. Obviously, the stadiums that have a dome or the stadiums in the South or California, it doesn't matter. But you have a lot of teams in the Northeast, the Red Sox, the Yankees, obviously, the Nationals, you know, the Tigers, and teams like that, where the weather could be a factor as you get late into October. So I kind of like it, especially with the extra playoffs, the fact that they're starting a little bit early, Barry. But another 3 weeks, we'll have a little baseball to talk about.
Good.
Well, you have a wonderful day, and you keep up the great work, and I love the work you do, and I think you, what I love about you is that you're bucking conventional wisdom, and that's, you make us think, Barry. So keep up the great work. I love it.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Barry. Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor up in Minnesota. I always love chatting with him. Always love catching up with him and hearing what's going on in the political world. And a lot of crazy stuff is going on. And Barry's exactly right. President Trump is making things happen. You may disagree with him politically. And as I've said many times, I'm not always on board with his style more than anything else. His style, not so much the accomplishments, but the style. But the guy is making it happen. What else can you say? He's making it happen. And he could end up having an extremely successful presidency. And he's probably going to do things that a lot of other presidents didn't get to do. Immigration, for example, DACA. And now he may actually do something about school safety, something that has eluded prior presidents. So this guy is getting things done. That much I can say. Thank you very much. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas saying good night.